Which Way LA is made possible in part by the Ralph M. Parsons Foundation, the Nathan Cummings Foundation, the Rosalind and Arthur Gilbert Foundation, and the John Randolph Haynes and Dora Haynes Foundation, which supports study and research into policy issues of the Los Angeles region.
The impact of immigration on California. Hello again, I'm Owen Olney, and this is Which Way LA, KCRW's ongoing series on the issues Southern Californians care about. Immigration reform is moving back to the front burner in Washington as the Bush administration cracks down on both undocumented workers and their American employers. At the same time, a new report says that in California, immigrants increase wages for native-born workers rather than pushing them down. We'll hear more tonight. On Reporter's Notebook, State Chief Justice Ron George says it again, California's courts are in trouble. First, here's the news. Mormon Olney back with Which Way LA on KCRW. Immigrants are being unfairly scapegoated for problems they don't cause. In fact, they boost the wages of native-born workers in California. That's according to a new study of immigrants, both legal and illegal. In a moment, we'll talk to the author and one of his critics. The study's being released just as immigration reform is getting attention again on Capitol Hill. At the same time, the Bush administration is cracking down at the border and against employers who hire undocumented workers. Dina Bunis is Washington Bureau Chief for the Orange County Register. Today, she heard Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff testify before a Senate committee. Dina, good to have you with us.
Hi, how are you?
Secretary hasn't just testified, but he's been flying congressmen around on the border and doing other things to draw attention to the things that the Bush administration is doing. What are they?
Well, the Bush administration is doing a number of things on several fronts. First, at the border, they're instituting their border initiative to not only increase border patrol agents, as you know, to bring National Guard troops down to the border, but also to step up the technology at the border, new radar, new sensors that can detect people trying to cross the border illegally. It's all part of what they call SBI, the Secure Border Initiative. And then on the political front, Chertoff and Commerce Secretary Gutierrez were on Capitol Hill today reiterating the administration's support for a comprehensive immigration plan. What we're seeing now is really a stepped-up activity on the part of the administration. Up to now, the president has mentioned immigration in speeches at the State of the Union when asked about how we can get along with the Democratic Congress. But this seems to show a little more flurry of activity around the issue.
Before we hear more about the comprehensive plan, they've also been engaged in highly publicized raids on companies around the country, not so much to catch the illegal immigrants as to take to court some of the employers.
Yes, one of the big drawbacks from the 1986 amnesty bill, when that was passed, the trade-off was we'll give amnesty to several million illegal immigrants that are here, and the trade-off for that was we will put a plan in place that means employers will only hire legal immigrants to work. The second part of that plan never happened. Congress was loath to go after businesses because they were the people that supported them. But now, over the past couple of years, you're right, there have been increased investigations. And Secretary Chertoff made it clear today that they're going after the big violators, the people who are hiring in bulk these illegal immigrants, knowingly in some cases. They're not after the people who have been hired, even though the byproduct of this is these people are arrested for immigration violations, and most of them will either be voluntarily returned to their home country or go through deportation proceedings.
And no more a catch and release, as they used to call it. What's that?
Catch and release, what happens is when someone is caught who's come in from Mexico over the border, they're usually given the opportunity to basically just walk back over the border or get a bus back to Tijuana, and they get back into the life in Mexico. When people come from other than Mexico, from Brazil, from El Salvador, from other mainly Central American and South American countries, it's a little bit more difficult to get them back to their home countries. In some cases, like with China, China's very slow to take back their immigrants who've come here illegally. And the government only has a certain amount of time that they can hold these people. So what often happens is they pick these people up, they give them an appearance ticket like you'd get for a speeding ticket or something, and they're released back into the community, hence catch and release. What they found had been happening was that these people were never showing up for their hearings, and that this became almost a game, that people would like being caught by the immigration authorities because they'd be released 50 or 60 miles into the interior of the country, and they'd never be heard from again. That process has now been stopped. They're all being detained. They're all being sent back to their home countries much quicker.
How do all these initiatives relate to the comprehensive plan that the president and, of course, Secretary Chertoff now want Congress to consider?
Well, one of the things that was clear last year was that the Republicans in Congress, the majority of them, wanted to see enforcement first. Some Republicans wanted to see enforcement only, but many wanted to see and be able to tell their constituents that the administration, the government, is serious about securing our borders and policing immigration laws. So I think what was behind, besides the need to do this, besides the 9/11 Commission report, which pointed out our porous nature of our border, they want to be able to show the American public that, yes, we're serious about enforcement. We are doing that first. We're getting a handle on what's happening at the border, believing that that would make the American public more receptive to a new guest worker program and a plan to legalize the estimated 12 million illegal immigrants that are working here now.
Okay, guest workers, and of course, the issue of the 12 million who are already in the country are sort of the elephants in the room.
Absolutely. Those are the two main stress points in this debate. And what's going on right now is that Senators McCain and Kennedy and their staffs are basically negotiating between themselves as to how far they can or what kind of details they can put into a plan. And from McCain's standpoint, he wants to garner as many Republican votes as possible. And from Senator Kennedy's standpoint, he wants a plan that he believes will benefit immigrants the most. So there is a little bit of to-ing and fro-ing going on here behind the scenes, and we expect a bill will be introduced sometime in the next couple of weeks.
Well, Dena Bunis, thanks a lot for that background.
You're most welcome.
Again, Washington Bureau Chief for the Orange County Register. Now, the effect of immigration on native-born workers is, of course, a major element in this ongoing debate. The Public Policy Institute of California has released a new report with some very surprising findings. Giovanni Parry is the author. He's an associate professor of economics at UC Davis, working this time for the Public Policy Institute of California. Professor, thanks a lot for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
The headlines are saying that your report indicates that rather than pushing down the wages of native-born Californians, immigrants actually push them up. How did you get to that conclusion?
So actually, there are two main results from this report. One is that analyzing data on wages and employment between 1960 and 2004 in California, we do not find any evidence that immigrants, foreign-born workers, have decreased the employment opportunity of native workers, neither by displacing them out of job, making them lose work, or by moving them out of the state. And the second effect is that this increased number of foreign-born workers, in fact, seem to have a positive effect. This positive effect is quite different for depending on the education of a U.S.-born worker. The worker who gets the smallest effect are workers without a high school degree, who basically have no impact on their wages almost from immigrants, while worker with high school degree and more get most of the benefits. Between 3 and 6.7% wage gains in the 1990-2004 period due to immigration. So I agree with you, this sounds surprising. How can more worker increase the wage of existing worker? But the key explanation is that immigrant workers, because of their differences in skills, in ability with native worker, tend to take jobs and fill occupation and perform tasks that complement rather than compete with native worker. These allow native workers to specialize in some tasks where they have a relative advantage. In particular, immigrants will not have the language skill, the knowledge of social networks, the familiarity with local interaction that the native do, but they will have the same as good manual and physical skills. So they will take jobs which are intensive in this type of skills so that native can shield themselves from competition by specializing in jobs that have more of an interaction language content. So this mechanism is working at all level of education, is particularly strong across education group, meaning that less educated immigrant coming in create more opportunity for highly educated. So when you have more worker, you also need more people doing the coordination, management, organization of this, and this creates jobs for intermediate to high education people, but also work at the low end of the spectrum. When you have more Masons, for instance, a lot of the native who used to be Mason now are headmaster, coordinator of construction sites, because as native they have better language skills, they have better interactive skills, so in a sense they can almost take advantage of this and can be bumped up by this opportunity of having more worker doing the manual job.
Are you talking about legal or illegal immigrants or both?
This study considered both. The data are for the U.S. from the U.S. Bureau of Census, which is the most comprehensive data on individual we have from 1960 to 2000. And given that these are anonymous question and identify immigrants by the country of birth, we are confident that this is one of the best way we have to get to all of the immigrants in the state or in the country. And so this would be the effect of together documented and undocumented immigrants.
Giovanni Perry, again, Associate Professor of Economics at UC Davis, reporting on his study for the Public Policy Institute of California. Steve Camerata is Director of Research at the Center for Immigration Studies in Washington. That's a think tank that's devoted to research and policy analysis of the impact of immigration. And Mr. Camerata, as always, good to have you back on our program.
Thank you for having me.
Two points by Mr. Perry. First, no evidence that there's decreased job opportunity for native-born workers. Secondly, that there's actually a positive effect on wages. What do you think?
Well, I think the first thing to point out is the way the study proceeds is that it basically treats California as if it were a market unto itself, kind of a discrete entity within the United States. The problem is the natives who can be harmed by immigration to California, since most of the natives who don't have a lot of education have either left or, probably more importantly, don't come to California anymore. From the 30s really through the early 1970s, large numbers of natives had come to California because it was a high growth area for employment. As immigration became much more pronounced in the 70s and then on till now, less educated natives from low employment growth areas like Pittsburgh or Buffalo stopped going to California. So if I look in California for the people, for the natives who might be harmed by immigration, I might find relatively few, because the fact is the people who are harmed can often be outside of California who now can't go there because the immigrants have short-circuited that problem. It's for this reason that when the National Academy of Sciences looked at the issue of immigrant wage effects in the late 1990s, they came to the conclusion that you couldn't focus just on one labor market. The fact is we live in a nationally integrated economy, and people can be harmed by immigration even if they don't live in that area, because people move between areas if wage differentials develop, and immigration short-circuits that. Now, on the question of the benefits that Mr. Perry calculates, the question here is, his study isn't finding those benefits as a result of a regression analysis looking, say, for correlation. As the immigrants come in, wages go up. What the study does is assume that the benefits exist, and then it's just a matter of measuring how big those benefits are. So, for example, if I assume that for every 10% increase in unskilled workers, wages for skilled workers go up by 2%, and it turns out immigration increased the unskilled worker supply by 20%, then that means wages for skilled workers went up 4%. It's that kind of assumption. It's not a demonstrated fact. Now, let me just say this. Economists do this kind of analysis. It's not absurd. It's not silly. It's just that it's seen as much less persuasive than actually finding empirical evidence for a change in wages, rather than having it as an assumption built into the study.
All right. Let me ask Professor Perry to respond, but do so if you can, given our limited time, in the context of what the implications are for public policy, because what we're really talking about here, of course, ultimately, is immigration reform. Professor Perry, go ahead.
Yes. So the first point that I cannot tell what the fact that people from outside California cannot come. That's incorrect. This is answered in Figure 5 of the report for people who have the report. I consider the correlation between net immigration of people from other states to California to the net immigration of foreign-born in California. So if it were true that in the 60s there were many people from outside, other states coming to California when there was very little immigration from outside the country, and then in the 90s there were few people coming in from the rest of the country when there are many immigrants, that would show a very strong negative correlation or some negative correlation. I find no correlation whatsoever between the net inflow of people from other states into California and the inflow of other countries. So I am very well aware of the problem that looking at one single market has, and the fact that you have to account for people who move out of that market and people who came in and don't do anymore. And there has been a lot of research from that report, which was quoted by Mr. Camerota, and my analysis tried to take account in the best way we have for that. As for the complementarity, again, absolutely, I don't assume this complementarity. I allow the data on wages to tell me whether there is complementarity or perfect competition between native and immigrant. I organize the data in groups with similar education and experience, and then I see if an inflow of immigrants in that group has a differential impact on the wage of native and the wage of immigrants. And the data tell me that there is a much bigger negative effect on the wage of previous immigrant than on the wage of current native, and so I aggregate those data to find the numbers. I think from the policy point of view, again, the problem is very complex. As the previous person spoke, the immigration has many aspects. I think my research and the research of many other economists, although there is some disagreement, in particular on the wage effects, should be used or should be thought of as contributing some good case for an economic reason for immigration. I would say that this study implied that the immigration of workers with low skill did not harm most of the American worker and, in fact, help several, as well as immigration of worker with high skill did not harm most of the American worker and helped several. So I think there will be, of course, more research. This is not the last word on this, but I think many economists are looking at this more carefully.
And Stephen Camerota, back to you. Obviously, you disagree on the way in which the study was conducted. There are various reasons for that. And again, rather than going into that, I think our listeners and we really don't have time for that kind of debate at this point. The question is, if Professor Perry is wrong, then what are the implications of that?
Well, let's look at whether he was right. He's telling us that 30% of Californians are made something like 17% poor, so the rest of the population can be made just 4% richer. And the people who are taking it on the chin happen to be immigrants who are mostly at the bottom of the labor market. So even if he's right, and let me say again, the benefits he calculated are not demonstrated benefits. They are assumed in the model. But nonetheless, even if he's right, what he's telling us is California is being really much transformed into a state of extremes, haves and have-nots, by immigration. In terms of policy, it turns out that most people in the public are not so worried about wages, mainly because the people who get hurt from immigration are mostly low income and poor, and they don't have a lot of influence. And most people seem to be concerned, obviously, about the fiscal effects on taxpayers. So even if my wages are a little bit higher because of immigration, I might have to pay a whole lot more to provide health care and schools and so forth to less educated immigrants who don't pay much in taxes. And that seems to be the kinds of things that but the public's concerned about. The public's concerned about the rule of law, national security, and issues of assimilation and national cohesion. And although I am someone concerned about wages and have a different perspective than Mr. Perry, the fact is it doesn't seem like wages is the primary concern. So it's not likely one way or the other that whether my evidence that wages, that the poor are being harmed, or his sense that they're not, matter very much in the policy debate, unfortunately.
Okay, once again, immigration reform back on the burner in Washington. We'll see what comes out of that. In the meantime, a reminder by this debate tonight of how complex and difficult the issues are. Thank you both for being with us. Stephen Camerota with the Center for Immigration Studies and Giovanni Perry of UC Davis, working for the Public Policy Institute of California. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
I'll be right back with Which Way LA.
For more information about Which Way LA or to sign up for the free podcast, visit kcrw.com/whichwayLA. CD copies are also available. Call 1-800-600-KCRW.
Or I'll be back with Reporter's Notebook on Which Way LA. California's courthouses are falling apart. There aren't enough judges, and lawyers qualified to serve on the bench won't take the job. That's according to Chief Justice Ron George in this year's annual report to the legislature. Linda Rapatoni is Daily Journal reporter based in Sacramento. Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
Chief Justice has said many of these things before. I suppose the fact that he's had to repeat them again and again suggests he's not getting what he wants out of the legislature. Let's start with qualified attorneys who don't want to serve on the bench. Why is that?
That's because they are afraid that they won't get enough retirement benefits when they go to retire. I mean, part of it is that they can get a much higher salary in the private sector, and the other part is that the retirement benefits for judges right now just don't match even the public lawyers like prosecutors in Contra Costa County.
So we're talking prosecutors and also defense attorneys as well. Public defenders have better retirement systems, apparently, than judges. What about the number of judges?
You mean how many judges are out there and how many that they need to get?
Yeah, it's my understanding that they're falling behind, particularly on civil calendars, because judges on the civil side have to go over to the criminal side. They get precedence, and as a result, some cases take years to resolve.
That's right. There's a study by the National Center for State Courts that indicates California needs at least 350 new judicial positions. And the California legislature and the governor signed a law allowing 50 new judges to be appointed this year, and they're seeking another 50 for 2008.
And yet they're behind by 350, so obviously that problem will continue, even if the Chief Justice gets what he wants. So what about the California courthouses, the state of the courthouses? How bad is it, and what does the Chief Justice want to see there?
The courthouse facilities are just either really overcrowded. Many of them are seismically just unsafe. They're poor security-wise. There are potential jurors who are sitting in the hallways with prisoners in custody being paraded right in front of them, getting them down the hallway, and you've got gangs and you've got potential violence there. So there's a real concern about that. And then last year, the presiding judge of Fresno County said they had a judge there who had no courtroom, nowhere to put her, and she literally had to push a shopping cart through the hallways from courtroom to courtroom looking for a place to try cases that she had.
We're talking with Linda Rapatoni, who's Daily Journal reporter in Sacramento. Well, how sympathetic is the legislature to this third branch of government, the judiciary, which can't function very well if it doesn't get the kind of resources the Chief Justice is asking?
You know, there's a sense in the legislature that there needs to be something done, that these counties, I mean, they're hearing from their constituents that they really need to have more judges in courtrooms. But the problem is a couple of fold. One is the Democrat-controlled legislature is a little reticent, or has been a little reticent, to give Schwarzenegger, anywhere from 50 to 150 new judge positions to fill over a three-year period. And the other part of the politics is that lawmakers are kind of concerned about where are the judges going to be allocated to? Which counties are going to get the judges first?
Okay, so there are a lot of issues, obviously, to be dealt with. Once again, Chief Justice Ron George making his annual report to the legislature, not a very positive one at this point. We'll try to follow it, see what happens as the legislative session goes on. Meantime, Linda Rapitone, thanks a lot for being with us.
You're welcome, Warren.
Daily Journal reporter based in Sacramento. Which Way LA, produced tonight by Katie Cooper and Dan Konecki, Technical Director Mike Newport. I'm Warren Olney. Join us again for Which Way LA on 89.9 KCRW.
Which Way LA is made possible in part by the Ralph M. Parsons Foundation, the Nathan Cummings Foundation, the Rosalind and Arthur Gilbert Foundation, and the John Randolph Haynes and Dora Haynes Foundation, which supports study and research into policy issues of the Los Angeles region.